Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, Monday, Italy's major unions staged a general strike in defiance of their government assistance in Israel's genocide against Palestine. Ports, train stations, civic buildings, schools, and other essential services shut down in multiple cities for multiple days, effectively bringing the nation to a halt. As opposition grows in Europe and around the globe, Israel remains unrepentant, employing every tactic it can to shut up critics and turn back the rising tide. Palestinian scholar, author, and journalist Ramzi Baroud is one in the crosshairs. He and his publication, The Palestine Chronicle, are accused of aiding terrorism, an application of lawfare deployed in defense of the rogue state. Dan Kovalik is a lawyer, educator, labor, peace, and justice activist, democracy defender, journalist, author, and filmmaker. Dan represented unions whose membership were targeted by Colombia's far-right death squads, and he's taken on Ramzi's and the Palestine Chronicle's case. Dan's book titles include No More War, How the West Violates International Law by Using Humanitarian Intervention to Advance Economic and Strategic Interest, The Case for Palestine, Why It Matters and Why You Should Care, and his latest, co-authored with Jeremy Kuzmarov, Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change, is set for release next week. Welcome back to the program, Dan.
Hey, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Well, it's always my great pleasure. You know that. Dan, before getting to Ramzi, though, the ISIS in Syria founder and former man with an American price on his head was feted in New York this week by the Trump administration and interviewed by none other than David Petraeus, the general in charge of one phase of the American destruction of Iraq and a former number one at the CIA, whose tenure turned out more like number two, if we can remember. Did you, Dan, catch any of the chat between Petraeus and the so-called Ahmed al-Sharaa, so-called president of so-called Syria?
I really didn't catch the substance. I saw the meeting happen. Of course, while many people might be shocked that that meeting took place, because, as you said, it was between a former CIA chief and the former head of ISIS. Also, most recently, the former head of al-Qaeda, the al-Nusra Front of al-Qaeda, and frankly, he still is head of that. You know, he basically, al-Qaeda is now in power in Syria. But to many of us, this isn't shocking because the CIA helped put al-Qaeda into power and helped put the new self-proclaimed leader, also known as al-Jilani, into power. So this, in many ways, makes total sense that they would have a sit down in New York City.
Well, in New York City, it should be remembered, 10 days or something after the anniversary of the 9/11 attacks in 2001. No sense of irony there. Was there any reaction along those lines in New York, in the press or demonstrations or anything? Anybody saying, hey, wait a minute, these are the guys that knocked down the Twin Towers?
I didn't see anything in the press. Obviously, we live in now an Orwellian world in which, we were always at war with East Asia or whatever. Al-Qaeda, now their crimes are being forgotten. And now Jilani, who, again, committed many crimes in both Iraq and Syria, is now portrayed as this upstanding leader that the U.S. wants to work with. Again, the press doesn't seem to see any problem with that. I think there were some small demonstrations against him. I saw a big one of those moving billboards,
right,
criticizing him was on the streets of New York. But aside from that, not much. Again, the mainstream press and the U.S. government, and frankly, most governments in the world seem okay with him, shockingly.
Well, that rolling billboard that you mentioned is significant, too. That's Randy Credico, the former, well, I guess he's still a bit of a comic, but also a political a commentator. He's very well known and very capable. That truck, as I remember, was intercepted, and the driver, who wasn't Randy Credico, but somebody else, was arrested or something, and the truck dragged away. It was doing nothing other than driving around. These are not uncommon sights at different rallies, and people use them for advertising even. You know, it's not something that's so strange to see. And yet, in this case, so much for your First Amendment.
Well, the First Amendment has been at least unofficially suspended in the United States, as has free speech rights in most of the Western world at this point, particularly when it comes to the Middle East, especially the Palestinians. People are losing jobs. They're losing reputations being even arrested for what used to be considered free speech over these issues. But, I think that the Western governments have finally shown their true colors. And when they can't, persuade people through propaganda, they're going to use brute force to enforce ideas. And that's what they're doing, though it's not working. I don't think people are buying the program anymore. And again, that's why the state is getting so much more repressive, because most of the people now see through the lies.
Well, they're not, as I mentioned, they're not buying it in Italy. At least on the streets and the unions, and even their major media there came out with statements. These are their legacy television mainstream media came out in support of the strikers. And yet Prime Minister Meloni is still going along with the program, allowing American military bases located in Italy to support actively the genocide. I don't see any comments coming out of her office declaring a genocide or a Holocaust going on. And the same can be said around the world, where people demonstrate more and more loudly, and still the government's policies don't change.
No, because these aren't democracies, despite what they like to claim. I mean, again, this shows, we're not governed by the will of the people. We're governed by a ruling class, a very small, rich, working ruling class that, again, when times are good, is happy to rule in a more benevolent way. But when there is resistance, which is now growing, and not only because of what's happening overseas, but because of the deprivations at home, they're just going to use more repressive tactics. And that's exactly what happens. In any case, they don't care what the people want. And that's shown especially in the spending priorities, where more and more money goes to the military and less for social programs. And again, you're going to see more reaction to that, more protests, and probably then more repression.
I don't know that people really understand the scope of this. I saw yesterday on Twitter a blurb on the arrest in Greece of Charlotte Cates. She's a Canadian activist, co-founder of the Samidun Palestinian Prisoner Solidarity Network, based out across the water from me in Vancouver. That organization was declared terrorist, as a terrorist or aiding and abetting terrorism in its support of Hamas, as I think the logic goes, and shut down by the Canadian government. Her house violently arrested or attacked when she arrested about a year and a half ago. But now she was arrested in Greece at the airport. Well, I think she was just transiting and deported from Europe, because it was an arrest made in regards to the Schengen zone, which covers all of Europe. I'm not sure which country brought the complaint. Did you hear about this at all by any chance, Dan?
I didn't hear about that particular incident, but I'm hearing about many incidents like that, both here in North America and also across the pond in Great Britain. I saw a young woman's cell phone was taken by police who showed up at her door because they were concerned not about things she was social media things she was posting, but things she was just apparently viewing on social media. That's where we're at these days. Well, and of course, you have in the U.S., they're now deporting, and this was a Democratic judge that ordered this. They're deporting the young Palestinian-American from Columbia University because he protested in support of Palestine. And even though he's married to an American, he has a newborn child with that wife, and they're deporting him either to Syria or Algeria. Jesus. Right there. It's something what's happening now.
Well, and the Syrian president, just to stay on that, apologies to Ramsey. We will get to you, Ramsey, and your case. But the even though the so-called president was of Syria in its post-revolution or coup, rather, formation, was in New York to attend the United Nations, the Palestinian delegates weren't allowed to enter into the United States to attend the United Nations, something that is goes against the charter of the UN itself.
Yeah, no, exactly. And again, which, you know, has led to calls by many people saying, well, maybe the UN's got to be, the General Assembly's got to be moved out of New York and moved somewhere else, because the U.S. increasingly uses its, you know, power as the host to deny guest visas to the UN that it doesn't like. And even as more and more countries recognize Palestine, and people were, you know, various leaders, including the Colombian president Gustavo Petro, made speeches in support of Palestine, and many others did as well. As you said, they did not allow the Palestinian delegation, even though it should be pointed out these were people from the Palestinian Authority in the West Bank, not Hamas, which gets along fine with the U.S. and Israel. In fact, is pretty much a lackey of Israel, and yet they still weren't allowed to come.
Yeah, and what is that? Just because the people in the Trump administration don't understand the difference between the West Bank and Gaza and Hamas and the PA? Or is it just anything that says Palestine on it just doesn't get through the door, or what?
No, I think that is it, that they, you know, my guess is Israel asked them to disinvite them, and that's what happened. And a Palestinian is a Palestinian as far as they're concerned. They're all presumed guilty. And I'm certain that it was simply by mere fact that they're Palestinian, and they didn't want to hear from them on the floor of the United Nations.
Well, I agree that the UN should move, but I think that it shouldn't be permanently placed in any single place. Then, you know, it's supposed to represent the globe. In this case, especially, though, it should be taken out of America. If it can't abide by the constitution of the organization, then it shouldn't stay. Where, Dan, just as a matter of curiosity, would you think a new UN or even a temporarily situated one should go or could go?
Well, there is a UN building, of course, in Geneva, and the UN, different UN bodies meet there. I would think that's a decent place. Again, Switzerland tends to be somewhat neutral in these types of things. But also maybe the Global South. Maybe it's time to put it in Johannesburg or, Santiago, Chile. I mean, I'm just kind of spitballing. But, you know, most of the people of the world live in the Global South, and it's time to give them some, you know, true representation.
Well, I was thinking maybe Syria. Well, I mean, you know, why not? You know,
Why not?
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Dan Kovalik. Kovalik, I'm sorry, Dan, I'll get that right yet. Dan is a lawyer, educator, labor, peace and justice activist, democracy defender, journalist, author, and filmmaker. He's appeared on this show for, I can't even remember, Dan, how many years and how many programs we've had together. He's currently representing, in his role as a lawyer, the case of Ramsey Baroud, who's also been on this program. Ramsey, the editor of the Palestine Chronicle, an author, activist in his own right, and Palestinian. So, Dan, what can you tell us about the case? Perhaps, first of all, what the charges being brought against Ramsey and the Chronicle are, and where things stand?
Yeah, well, this is a case that's been going on now for over a year, and it clearly is a case designed to curb and quiet dissent over Palestine. The goal is to bankrupt Ramsey and the Palestine Chronicle, put them out of business so that they can no longer report on what's happening to the Palestinian people. What they claim in the case, which is just absurd on many levels, is that somehow the Palestine Chronicle aided and abetted the hostage taking of three Israelis because it allowed a journalist in Gaza to write for the Palestine Chronicle. They also claim the Palestine Chronicle paid this journalist, which is not true. But they say they allowed him to write articles for the Palestine Chronicle, and that that person, that journalist, was part of the hostage taking in Gaza, which, you know, Ramsey does not believe to be the case. But in any – and by the way, that individual, that journalist, was killed by the IDF in what has become known as a massacre of 300 different Palestinians. And so he did not live to tell the tale, right, or to deny anything, which is pretty convenient for the plaintiffs. But again, all of this was designed to quiet Ramsey and the Palestine Chronicle. I think in the end we will prevail because I do think it's a case without basis in law or fact, as we as lawyers say. But in the meantime, the case will certainly go on, certainly no matter what, for at least probably 3 years, right? And so it's 3 years in which Ramsey will have to worry about the case, pay attorney's fees and costs in the case. Though I will say I, you know, as the lead lawyer, I'm trying very hard, you know, to not charge very much for the case. So that won't happen to him. But in any case, the goal is to bankrupt him. And there's, by the way, there's three other lawsuits just like it in the United States against Al Jazeera and also against the AMP, the American Muslims for Palestine group. And again, also against his daughter, Ramsey's daughter, Zarifa Barood, because of her work with the AMP. So it's a concerted effort to quiet dissent. Now, of course, in Gaza, what the IDF does is simply murder journalists, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you said that about 270 journalists have been killed already, which is unprecedented, right? There's no other armed conflict in the world, even in World War II, where that many journalists were killed.
Well, many more, too, if you count the 30 that were just wiped out in neighboring Lebanon in a single day.
Yes, yes. So thank God, I guess, at this point, they can't kill journalists in the U.S. in that way.
They're Hamas. The journalists in Palestine are Hamas. Doctors and nurses in Palestine are Hamas. Lawyers in Palestine are Hamas. Poets in Palestine are Hamas.
And the
Freedom Flotilla itself, on its en route with baby formula and so forth, they're Hamas as well. Everybody is Hamas. What are the mechanics, Dan, of bringing this charge against Ramsey and others? Does there has to be a complaint from some third party, or was somebody, some investigative agency, had its ears tuned up and were watching the Palestine Chronicle and saying, hey, wait a minute, this guy's name, and he's Hamas, like all the other journalists, or something. You know, how did this charge come to be?
Well, it was filed, you know, officially by three people who were held hostage, three Israelis who were held hostage, you know, taken hostage on October 7th and held for a period of time in Gaza. But we know from various investigative reporting, including most recently by a guy named Richard Silverstein, who's a great investigative journalist, that the IDF and Shin Bet and others really helped concoct this case and then recruited the plaintiffs to bring it against Ramsey and the Palestine Chronicle. So it's not just some, you know, the three plaintiffs in Israel didn't just say, oh, let's bring this case. I mean, it is a concerted effort.
And then the Israeli authorities petition the United States and say, oh, well, this Ramsey fellow is one of your citizens, and this is what we want you to do. And then they America says, oh, yes, OK, Israel, that's what we're going to do. Or there is some kind of treaty in place or something that impels the American courts to follow up on Israeli complaints.
Well, no, you know what they brought it under, Chris, and we've talked about this law before in the case of Coca-Cola, but I was a plaintiff's lawyer in that case, but they brought it under the Alien Tort Claims Act, which I myself have used against companies, right, for crimes in Colombia. They're using it to sue Ramsey in the Palestine Chronicle.
Well, is turnaround not fair play in that regard? Then is not Israel subject to that same act, and can they not be cases brought against them for the myriad crimes against humanity that state has committed?
Well, the truth is that act could not be used for that because the only way you could use that is if you could find some Israelis in the U.S. Who had minimum contacts here that you could serve papers on and allege they committed crimes in Israel. Yes, so the Alien Tort Claims Act could be used for that. And it has been used in analogous cases. But against Israel itself, no, because you can only sue, again, U.S. nationals or people with a presence in the U.S. Aliens can use it to sue them, right? But we couldn't go to Israel to do that. But again, if an Israeli soldier or even Netanyahu himself, if we could serve him process while he was in the United States, yes, you could sue him under the Alien Tort Claims Act, and maybe that is something that could happen.
What about these dual citizens that are serving as soldiers and or mercenaries for the genocide that are Americans as they come and go? On holidays or back home to see their families, are they vulnerable to not the Alien Torts Act specifically, but other crimes against humanity laws or such in the United States?
I would actually think they are vulnerable to an Alien Tort Claims Act case. Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
I'm thinking of that motorcycle gang that is doing target practice at the so-called humanitarian, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely they could be sued. And I hope those sorts of lawsuits start happening. They are happening in other countries, right? A number of Israeli soldiers are being, prosecuted or sued in various other countries for crimes in Israel. And yeah, that could happen here. It absolutely could happen and should happen.
Well, so what happens next? We're fast running out of time, and I want to cover your book with Jeremy Kuzmarov before we go, Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change. That's going to be released just next week. But before that, so what's the next thing for Ramsey then and his case? We're just sort of at a wait and see. I don't know how much you can say in your position as his lawyer.
No, I can say we're in the middle of discovery, meaning both of us are asking for evidence from the other side. I'm going to depose the plaintiffs themselves next week and find out what they know and what their claims are based on. And then we'll be able to file a motion for summary judgment and hopefully get the case kicked out, arguing that, look, after all the discovery, they still don't have any evidence that can support their case. So that is the hope that'll happen.
And is there any chance to countersue for a trivial prosecution or I've forgotten the proper term.
Yeah, we could seek sanctions for bringing a frivolous case.
Frivolous, yes.
We are planning on doing that. Yes. Right now, we just want to get our folks cleared and off the hook, and then that would be the next step.
So now, Dan, the book, I'm excited to see what you guys have written about. You and I have talked over the years of your multiple trips into Syria before the fall, and now you and Jeremy Kuzmarov, who's been on this program many times from Covert Action Magazine, Syria, Anatomy of Regime Change, set to be released October 1st, if I'm correct in that, first
yes,
or second.
Yes, that is correct, yes.
So tell me about the book in 2 minutes or less.
Yeah, well, Jeremy, and by the way, there's a foreword by Oliver Stone. And, you know, we did a lot of research and basically showed that what was claimed to be a popular uprising in Syria beginning in 2011 was nothing of the sort. It was a world war backed by a number of different nations, including the United States, using terrorist groups like ISIS, like Al-Qaeda, to try to unseat President Bashar al-Assad. Through that war, which was a brutal war in which about 600,000 people were killed. That war combined with very draconian sanctions imposed on Syria, which really impoverished the country, over years ended up resulting in Al-Qaeda coming to power in December of 2024. And that was always the plan. That was always the plan of the West. And we cite, amongst other things, the 2012 declassified document from the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency, which said that was the plan. The Western allies were supporting Al-Qaeda. They say that specifically, to overthrow Assad, and that the goal of Al-Qaeda, for its part, was to set up a religious caliphate in Syria, which they're doing as we speak, which involves repressing, killing, kidnapping, raping members of different minority groups there. So I would say, certainly to Americans, that is your tax dollars at work for you.
Well, 24 years after the 9/11 event, and look what it's wrought. And it's something that we have predicted wearily way back then. And it's even worse than we could have known. Dan, it's always a joy to speak with you. Thanks a lot for coming on again, eh?
Thank you. It's always my pleasure.
And thanks, too, to Tyson Strandland for coming on. That's all we've got for this week. Until the next time. Thanks, Dan.
Since long before this moment, but especially since then, the Western world's governments have supported the killing of children by Israeli soldiers without fail every day, gunning them down with weapons made in the UK. Palestine action formed to try to end these arms sales that the courts could not defend. The courts could not defend them, so the parliament became the vehicle to support the bombing of the tents, which needs to be supported. So says the British state, aside from 26 MPs who failed to conflate supporting terrorism with opposing Israeli crimes by those who think we're living in some very scary times, where it is now against the law to express sympathy with those who would destroy corporate property. Illegal to say with eyes open wide, I support Palestine action, I oppose genocide. International law, with UK law as well, forbids such weapon sales to countries like Israel. That is, countries that are committing crimes of war are not allowed to import, no access to the store. But in London and Berlin, they just look the other way at those inconvenient laws. There's a new one today, solidarity imprisoned and vilified. If you support Palestine action and oppose genocide, as we bear witness to this constant slaughter, depriving Gaza of food and water, bombing children day and night, where body parts strewn are in hourly sight. The authorities take aim and then crack down on those who dare dissent in London town, who must stand up, not stand aside, who support Palestine action and oppose genocide. Or will we disappear? Have a Spartacus moment or a time of fear? Back down and go home, or stand with humanity, support the war machine, or support sanity? We'll see what comes next in the story of the descent of Keir Starmer and his kindercidal government. We'll see who's willing to shout with pride, I support Palestine action, I oppose genocide. I support Palestine action, I oppose genocide.
Escape the Narrative. Guerrilla Radio.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby Mountain.